Angie Gorkoff, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. And welcome to special Valentine's edition of Short Stories. We're going to start with a Valentine's Day mystery entitled Coffee Dates. And this is written by Lori and Josh Pachter. And they say, enjoy this mystery short story with a romantic twist perfect for Valentine's Day. It was first published in October 2015 in the Saturday Evening Post. Heather took a deep breath to steady her nerves. Nerves! Her colleagues at work admired the way she kept her head in emergencies, but here she was, as jittery as a teenager. She twisted the rearview mirror so she could see herself. Tousled blonde hair, cropped short, hardly any makeup, hazel eyes that were steady enough, if a little wary. She ran her fingers through her hair and wiped away a bit of stray lipstick and sighed. This was as good as it was going to get. She'd showered and changed after her shift, but as usual, she'd been rushed. Well, wasn't that why she was doing this in the first place? Because she could never find the time to do it the normal way? Yes, she'd taken precautions. Her friends had been adamant about that. Meet for coffee first, they'd said. Somewhere indoors and in public, not a park or, God forbid, his apartment. Tell us where you'll be and when. And make sure you spend at least a week getting to know him on email before you meet him. Check, 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 and check. And now it was 2:55 on a cold, rainy Sunday afternoon in October. And here she was, sitting in her car, parked not right in front of the coffee shop, but four doors down, and nervous as a kitten. The wood-trimmed exterior of Mr. Greenbean's looked as inviting as it always did. It was one of her favorite places to sit and read in the evenings. Those times she wanted to be alone, but not by herself. Today, though, it seemed somehow frightening. She frowned and examined herself again in the mirror. Maybe she ought to have put on some eyeshadow. She must own some. Well, it's too late now. She shook her head to clear out the thoughts she couldn't control and focused instead on the man she was here to meet. He'd been perfectly pleasant in his emails. He could spell and use apostrophes correctly, and he was polite and not too pushy. He balked a bit at her no photos and let's email for a while before we meet rules, but she'd given him no choice. They traded daily messages for 2 weeks before she agreed to have coffee with him, and he seemed both interested and interesting, willing to let things develop on her timeline rather than trying to impose his own. So what was it that was bothering her? Just the idea of meeting a stranger? Or the fact they'd met online and not in the real world? These days, the borderline between online and real grew blurrier every day. Thinking back over their correspondence, she realized that when you came right down to it, he'd revealed little about himself. He'd shared a few of his interests, you know, books he'd read and movies he'd enjoyed and restaurants he liked, but he'd stayed almost entirely on the surface, providing little insights into the human being who lived beneath the data points. He seemed more interested in finding about her than in talking about himself, which of course had been flattering. To be fair, though, had she gone much deeper in her responses than he had? Not really. Her friends had advised her to keep it light and breezy, to convey a sense of what they call girlish enthusiasm. You're just so competent sometimes, Heather, you know? Try to be more, you know, helpless. Well, she'd find out soon enough. Her watch said 3:03. Don't be early, they'd warned her, but don't be late. She got out of her car and went into Mr. Greenbean's. The moment she pushed open the heavy glass door, the coffee shop's busy warmth calmed her down. As always, the big room was crowded and buzzing with a dozen animated conversations, the baristas shouting to be heard over the burr of the espresso machines. Shrugging off her wet coat, Heather looked for a man sitting alone. Oh, there were three of them. Weren't real men supposed to be home watching football on Sunday afternoons? She thought back over her 2 weeks of correspondence with Charles and regretted, after all, her insistence on their not exchanging pictures. What would the guy who'd written those emails look like? He'd seem interested and friendly, maybe not the warmest or fuzziest guy who'd responded to her profile, but there'd been a definite enthusiasm in everything he wrote. Okay, so look for enthusiasm, she told herself. And what else? His messages had seemed somehow precise. That was the word. They'd come across as carefully crafted documents, not the usual rambling stream of consciousness. Okay, so look for precision. She scanned the room. She was good at this, drawing sensible conclusions from a quick study of small details. It was a talent that got her noticed at work and made her good at her job. One of the three sitting alone guys was absorbed in his cell phone and was way too young for her in a hoodie and unlaced sneakers. She dismissed him without a second glance. Bachelor number two was dressed quite well. Yes, you could say precisely, with close-cut hair and striking light blue eyes that had looked up only briefly when she walked in. Not interested? Not there to meet someone? Not wanting to appear too eager or simply shy? Heather had no idea. He was the right age and good looking to boot. The table in front of him was clean, with cup, saucer, spoon, and napkin arranged. There was no other word for it. Precisely. Huh, she thought. Could be. But she found herself strangely intimidated by the thought of approaching him. The clothes were obviously expensive. The man was dressed better than she was. And then bachelor number three was more rumpled than precise and seemed altogether softer, with his curly brown hair and flannel shirt and down vest. He was also good-looking, but in more low-key, cuddly sort of way. When he looked up and caught her eye and smiled, a little sugar spilled from his spoon to the wooden surface of his table. Warm brown eyes. Nice eyes, she thought. She glanced back at the blue-eyed man, who was fussily arranging the collar of his shirt. The color of his shirt matched his eyes, too precisely to be coincidental. She felt a faint undercurrent of unease at the thought of trying to make conversation with him. How ironic! She was so completely capable in an emergency, but could be so inept in social situations, especially when men were involved. She looked back at Mr. Flannel. Be safe, her friends had told her. Make sure you're comfortable. Mr. Flannel felt comfortable. Hitching her purse a little higher on her shoulder, she walked over to him and said, couples.com? She remembered to smile. He looked up at her, grinned, stood up, and offered his hand. It was warm. Or maybe she was just still chilled from the outside. It's great to meet you face to face, he said. I'm glad you made it. The rain's awful. What can I get you? Coffee? Tea? Heather hung her wet coat over the back of the chair and sat down. Would it be too Meg Ryan if I asked for a soy milk hot chocolate? No such thing as too much Meg Ryan, he smiled. Just hold off on the tuna salad for a couple of dates. She laughed and felt herself blush, flattered and impressed, both with his response and with the fact that she'd been made to laugh by a man she'd just met. That didn't happen much in Heather's world. He had a nice smile. It reached his eyes, crinkling the skin around them. Be right back, he said, and he went over to the counter. She swiveled to watch him, and as she did so, caught the eye of the well-dressed man. He frowned slightly as if appraising her and finding her wanting. "Your loss," she thought. And just as well. For reasons she couldn't articulate, the guy struck her as kind of creepy. Charles came back with her hot chocolate and more coffee for himself. Heather wrapped her hands around her mug and studied the heart the barista had made in the foam, trying to think of what she should say. She hated this part of internet dating, coming up with the right words to offer someone who was, if you're willing to be honest about it, really just a stranger. Well, Charles came to her rescue. "Why soy milk, if you don't mind me asking? Are you a vegetarian?" "Thank goodness," she thought, "a pitch I can hit." "No, not really. Caffeine and dairy just don't agree with me, so I usually stick with decaf tea. It's such a nasty afternoon, though. I thought I'd go with something a little heartier." She took a tentative sip, a little too hot. "What about you? Any dietary eccentricities I should know about?" He nodded at his cup. "Yeah, I'm a caffeine junkie, and I eat way too many Girl Scout cookies in the spring. If I saw a Girl Scout cookie truck on the street, I'd hijack it." She laughed. "You like them that much?" He made a guilty-as-charged grimace. "Did you know that a Prius can hold exactly 55 cases of Girl Scout cookies?" Startled, Heather frowned at him. "You have got it bad. If it's not too personal, you don't have some kind of eating disorder, do you? Or do you just like hanging out with Girl Scouts?" "I like hanging out with one Girl Scout," he smiled. "My daughter, Abby. If I buy enough cookies, I'm a hero. And hey, somebody's got to eat them." Heather raised an eyebrow. "Your daughter?" He hadn't mentioned a daughter in his emails. In fact, she realized he hadn't said anything that even hinted at his being a dad, and he certainly hadn't seemed like a man who binged on Girl Scout cookies. "Are you married?" she asked, alarmed. There was a sudden coldness in the pit of her stomach. She wasn't going to make that mistake again. A look of surprise crossed Charles' face, then morphed into chagrin. "I'm sorry," he said, and reached across the table to touch her arm. "I thought sure I'd told you. I'm divorced, about 5 years ago. Abby's 11. She lives with her mom, and I see her every other weekend." He looked concerned. "It was pretty friendly for a divorce, and it's all ancient history now. I promise you, I'm not some messed up loser trying to put his life back together by rebounding straight out of a breakup into a new relationship." She sighed out the breath she hadn't realized she was holding. "That's a relief. I've already met that guy." She tried her hot chocolate again, and this time it was just right. "So what's your favorite? Cookie, I mean." "Oh yeah, definitely Thin Mints. You have to ask. Please don't tell me you're a do-si-doer. I don't think I could handle it." "Those are the peanut butter ones, right? I'm not really up on my Girl Scout cookies." She was lying, a little. The few women she worked with sometimes brought in order sheets for their kids. "And I don't think I've do-si-do'd since 7th grade gym class. But mint and chocolate, that's a definite like. I'll have to make an effort next spring to track some down." "I know where you can get your hands on 55 cases, Charles said, with another of his melting smiles. "Maybe just a couple boxes. I have to watch what I eat." Heather remembered something from their correspondence. "Didn't you tell me you do CrossFit? How do Girl Scout cookies fit into that picture?" He tilted his head quizzically. "CrossFit? You said you..." She let the sentence trail off, thinking, uh-oh. "You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?" "Not a clue," he said, realization beginning to dawn in those gentle brown eyes. At that moment, the young guy in the hoodie jumped up, knocking over his chair and swearing. Heather and Charles watched him ride it out and storm out into the rain, almost bowling over a woman who was just coming in. The newcomer paused inside the door and scanned the room exactly as Heather had. She was a bit on the plump side, soft where Heather was harder and more toned. Medium-length auburn hair curled around a face that wore a lot more makeup than Heather's ever did. She was petite, practically tiny, and dressed almost entirely in ruffles. After a moment's hesitation, she made up her mind and marched purposefully to the table where the carefully dressed man was sitting. He looked up, startled, as she spoke to him, then rose and pulled out a chair for her and helped her with her coat. Smooth, Heather thought. Very smooth. Then she remembered the CrossFit that apparently didn't fit and returned her attention to the man in flannel. "Your name's not Charles," she said, "is it?" He shook his head. "Which makes you not Kimberly," he said sadly. They sat there in uncomfortable silence. "But you said the secret password," he finally said. "Couples.com?" Heather turned her cup slowly in its saucer. "I've been emailing a guy named Charles for the last 2 weeks. We never exchange photos, so I have no idea what he looks like. I thought you..." She felt her face redden. "And I've traded half a dozen emails with Kimberly. That must be her with all the frou-frou." "I'm such a nitwit," she said. "I should go over there and..." She fumbled for her bag and reached around for her coat. He put a hand on her arm and stopped her. When she turned back, he was smiling again. "I didn't swap pictures with Kimberly either, so I just assumed... Who knew there'd be two sets of us meeting in the same place at the same time?" His smile turned into a grin. "I'd love to know what you made you pick me. Maybe you can tell me over a tuna salad sometime." Heather caught the Meg Ryan reference, but hesitated. She didn't want to leave this good-looking, comfortable guy in flannel who made her laugh and had an 11-year-old daughter and a cookie obsession. But her sense of duty nudged her. "That's a nice thought," she said, "but I probably ought to clear this up with Charles. Let him know there's been a mistake." She rubbed a hand over the back of her hair where it was cut the shortest, the way she did when she was embarrassed. Mr. Flannel was silent a moment, looking out the plate glass window at the ragged line of bushes that separated Mr. Greenbeans from the sidewalk. Then he turned back to her and patted her arm. "I don't know about you," he said, "but I think I came out ahead on this deal. What if we just pretend we came here to meet each other after all?" A man's hearty chuckle and the bubbling laughter of a woman made them turn and look. Charles and Kimberly had their heads close together, and he was just taking hold of her hand. "What do you say we start over?" the man in flannel said. "I'm Mark, and I'm very happy to meet you." She relaxed. "I'm Heather," she said, "and I'm happy to meet you." Early the next morning in her sunlit kitchen, Heather, dressed for work, took on an appreciative sniff of her jasmine tea. Indian summer had arrived overnight, and the warmth felt lazy and peaceful. Picking up the morning paper from the mat outside her door, she returned to her kitchen and she shook it open, and a wintry chill ran through her, almost knocking the mug from her hand. "Local woman brutally murdered," read the headline above a professional photograph of Kimberly from the coffee shop. Heather took a closer look, hoping she was wrong, but she knew better than to doubt herself. She recognized the face, the ruffles, the hair. It couldn't be anyone else. She set down her mug, her hands suddenly shaky, and read the article. "Kimberly Scanlon, 32, local high school English teacher. A couple of teenagers out for a midnight stroll had spotted her crumpled over the steering wheel of a car on Wheel Avenue and called the police. She'd been strangled, probably sometime between 5 and 10 last night. According to the coroner, there were lacerations and abrasions on her face and upper torso, but no defensive wounds." Heather recognized the address where the car had been found. It was less than a mile from the coffee shop. "Charles," she whispered. There was no time to waste on breakfast. Heather poured out her tea in the sink and buckled on her gun, clipped her badge to her belt, tucked the paper under her arm, and headed for the car. It was going to be one heck of an interesting day, and she'd have a lot to tell Mark tonight over dinner. And that concludes our Valentine's Day mystery entitled Coffee Shop. Our next Valentine's Day short story is entitled 25 Surprising Valentine's Day Facts You Probably Didn't Know. You'll never guess how roses became a symbol of love. And this is written by Nitya Rao. She says, when it comes to Valentine's Day, there are certain traditions, like flowers and chocolate, that we take at face value, despite not knowing their true significance to the holiday. But there are some surprising numbers and facts behind those Valentine's Day gifts and desserts that we look forward to every February 14th. For instance, the annual consumption of heart-shaped boxes of chocolates is a staggering number that you probably never would have guessed. Think eight figures. And don't even get us started on the significance of lace doilies in our Valentine's Day crafts. So here we're sharing a list of our favorite Valentine's Day facts in the hopes that they'll make each caramel-covered, ooey-gooey, chocolatey treat that much sweeter, and each Valentine's Day card that much more fun to write. After all, if you really love the holiday, you might as well learn everything there is to know about the history of Valentine's Day, right? Like who St. Valentine is anyway? He's different from Cupid, right? You could even make a Valentine's Day activity out of quizzing your partner on some of these trivia-ready facts. The symbol, we're going to start with number one. The symbol of roses traces back to a mix-up in the 18th century. So according to time.com, the concept of flowers having different meanings dates back to the 18th century, when Lady Montague sent a series of letters from Turkey to her home in England, describing the Turkish flower language as Selam. She misinterpreted it to mean that every flower symbolizes a different sentiment used to send love letters. Though this wasn't exactly true, the concept spread throughout society with the publication of a dictionary for the language of flowers in 1819. In turn, sales of roses, a perceived symbol of love and beauty, skyrocketed in the 19th century. Number two, the term lovebirds isn't just a figure of speech. Lovebirds is commonly used to describe two people who are very much in love, especially around Valentine's Day. But did you know that the taxonomic origin of this figure of speech is more literal than its everyday use? The word is also the common name for agapornis birds, native to Africa. The brightly colored parrots mate for life, travel in pairs, and even feed each other, similar to couples you might see when going out to eat on Valentine's Day. Number three, Valentine's Day is one of the most popular days to get engaged. According to a survey from Wedding Wire, Valentine's Day was the most popular day in 2020 to get engaged. This matches up with plenty of other surveys, which have found that February 14th, Christmas, and New Year's are all dates that people love to pop the question. Number four, people like to celebrate their pets on Valentine's Day. In 2020 alone, people plan to spend a whopping $1.7 billion on their pets for the holiday of love. That means toys, clothes, beds, and more. The real question is, are gifts for our pets really just presents for ourselves? Number five, when did Valentine's Day become a holiday? Near the end of the 5th century, or around 500 AD, Pope Gelasius declared February 14th as St. Valentine's Day. As for the origin and reasoning, that's a bit murkier. Number six, the oldest known Valentine was written from prison. Yeah, you heard that right. Charles, the Duke of Orleans, was imprisoned in the Tower of London when he was 21 years old. In 1415, he wrote a letter to his wife with a poem that used the term Valentine to refer to her. The first line read, "My very gentle Valentine," and is considered by many to be the very first recorded Valentine. Number 7. The highest grossing movie of all time is a love story. The movie that made the most money of all time was the historical romance Titanic, which brought in $659 million total at the domestic box office. Well, it held the title of highest grossing until Avatar came out 12 years later. Number 8, lace has a romantic meaning. Lace can be seen all around on Valentine's Day, from ribbons to gift boxes. Well, the word itself has an origin befitting the holiday. The English word lace comes from the Latin word for snare, as in you ensnare someone's heart. Try putting that in your next Valentine's Day card. Number 9. Who invented conversation hearts, the candy? Pharmacist Oliver Chase initially cut medicinal lozenges by hand, but eventually started making versions without medicine because candy was becoming popular. In the mid-1800s, he invented a lozenge-cutting machine to speed up the process, and later a lozenge-printing machine to print words onto candy. Number 10, an important invention was declared on Valentine's Day. How do you let distant loved ones know you care on Valentine's Day? Probably a call or text. Alexander Graham Bell, the man who invented the telephone, applied for a patent on February 14, 1876. Number 11. Who was Saint Valentine, the person? You know, it's unclear. For starters, there was more than one Saint Valentine. Some historians point to a 3rd century Roman priest who secretly married couples in defiance of the Roman Emperor Claudius II Gothicus. Others point to a different priest, this one thrown in jail for attempting to assist Christians in Roman prisons. Number 12. Valentine's Day was initially a Roman fertility festival. Yes, you heard that right. We won't get into the details, but it goes without saying that those first celebrations were a far cry from the Valentine's Day we know and love today. Number 13. Cupid wasn't always a sweet, innocent baby. Instead, the real Cupid was an inconquerable mythological god named Eros, according to Time.com. He was initially depicted as a young man who, despite being handsome and possessing the capability to make people fall in love, was also quite threatening. Number 14. People really did used to wear their hearts on their sleeves. During the Middle Ages festival that celebrated the goddess Juno, Roman men were known to have drawn the names of potential partners on their arms. Number 15. Valentine's Day cost a lot more than you might think. The National Retail Federation reported that Americans spent more than $21 billion on Valentine's Day gifts in 2021 alone. And that was during the ongoing pandemic, if you can believe it. Number 16. Pets get Valentine's Day gifts too, and a lot of them. Another statistic from the National Retail Federation claims that gifts for pets made up a whopping $1.3 billion of the money spent on Valentine's Day in 2021. That's more than the $1.1 billion spent on coworkers. Number 17. We have Richard Cadbury to thank for Valentine's Day chocolates. The tradition of eating chocolate on Valentine's Day is mostly due to the efforts of one man, Richard Cadbury, the son of the Cadbury chocolate manufacturer. Simply to encourage more sales, he started packaging his chocolates in heart-shaped boxes, and, well, the rest is history. Number 18. Valentine's Day is the busiest day of the year for florists. It's ahead of Christmas and Mother's Day. By the way, more than half of Valentine's Day flower purchases are roses, but we bet you knew that already. Number 19. It's not clear why X signifies a kiss. Dozens of plausible theories abound, but they've simply never been confirmed. And we're not the only generation that's been confused. According to the Washington Post, there are many citations from as early as 1880 that bemoan the perplexing symbol. One such poem reads, "Why do our sweet, sentimental young misses in love letters make little crosses for kisses?" Number 20. Approximately 36 million heart-shaped boxes of chocolate are sold each year. Yes, 36 million. Just so we're clear, that's a total of 58 million pounds of chocolate. Makes you feel a little better about the few pieces you ate after dinner now, doesn't it? Number 21. At least 145 million Valentine's Day cards are given each year, too. And by the way, that's in the US alone, and it doesn't include the cards given by children to each other within their classrooms at school. It makes sense then that Hallmark has reported Valentine's Day to be the second most popular card-giving holiday just after Christmas. Number 22. Conversation hearts take the cake in terms of production numbers. Every day, yes, day, approximately 100,000 pounds of conversation hearts are produced. That's about 8 billion conversation hearts per year. And nearly all of those are sold during a brief 6-week period between January 1st and Valentine's Day. It's no wonder they're the top-selling Valentine's Day confection after chocolate. Number 23. Hershey makes more than 80 million chocolate kisses daily. It's often head-to-head with M&M's for the title of top-selling candy in America. Are you curious about the third ranking? Well, that's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Number 24. Galentine's Day is incredibly popular these days, too. This made-up holiday was first mentioned in a 2010 episode of the TV show Parks and Recreation, and it's since kick-started a massive, nearly unbelievable wave of friend-to-friend spending. The National Retail Federation states that since 2010, such friendly gift expenses have practically tripled to $1.6 billion. And number 25, on average, consumers plan to spend upwards of $150 on their partners and loved ones. To be precise, the National Retail Federation estimates that consumers plan to spend an average of $164.76 on their recipients back in 2021. And even with a decline in restaurant dining during the pandemic, 41% said they'd still plan a special dinner or celebration at home. I guess the standards are high. And that concludes our top 25 Valentine's Day facts. Next up on this special Valentine's Day edition of Short Stories, we have the history of Valentine's Day explained by the editors at history.com. They say, Valentine's Day occurs every February 14th. In 2024, Valentine's Day falls on a Wednesday. Across the United States and in other places around the world, candy and flowers and gifts are exchanged between loved ones, all in the name of Saint Valentine. But who is this mysterious saint, and where did these traditions come from? Find out about the meaning and history of Valentine's Day from the ancient Roman ritual of Lupercalia that welcomed spring to the card-giving customs of Victorian England. So, the legend of Saint Valentine, where did Valentine's Day originate from? The history of this holiday and the story of its patron saint is shrouded in mystery. We do know that February has long been celebrated as a month of romance, and that Saint Valentine's Day, as we know it today, contains vestiges of both Christian and ancient Roman tradition. But who was St. Valentine, and how did he become associated with this ancient rite? So, the Catholic Church recognizes at least three different saints named Valentine, or Valentinus, all of whom were martyred. One legend contends that Valentine was a priest who served during the 3rd century in Rome. When Emperor Claudius II decided that single men made better soldiers than those with wives and families, he outlawed marriage for young men. Valentine, realizing the injustice of the decree, defied Claudius and continued to perform marriages for young lovers in secret. When Valentine's actions were discovered, Claudius ordered that he be put to death. Still others insist that it was Saint Valentine of Terni, a bishop, who was the true namesake of the holiday, and he too was beheaded by Claudius II outside Rome. Other stories suggest that Valentine may have been killed for attempting to help Christians escape harsh Roman prisons, where they were often beaten and tortured. According to one legend, an imprisoned Valentine actually sent the first Valentine greeting himself after he fell in love with a young girl, possibly his jailer's daughter, who visited him during his confinement. Before his death, it is alleged that he wrote her a letter signed, "From Your Valentine," an expression that is still in use today. Although the truth behind the Valentine legends is murky, the stories all emphasize his appeal as a sympathetic, heroic, and most importantly, romantic figure. By the Middle Ages, perhaps thanks to this reputation, Valentine would become one of the most popular saints in England and France. The origins of Valentine's Day, a pagan festival in February. While some believe that Valentine's Day is celebrated in the middle of February to commemorate the anniversary of Valentine's death or burial, which probably occurred around AD 270, others claim that the Christian Church may have decided to place St. Valentine's feast day in the middle of February in an effort to Christianize the pagan celebration of Lupercalia. Celebrated at the Ides of February, or February 15th, Lupercalia was a fertility festival dedicated to Faunus, the Roman god of agriculture, as well as to the Roman founders Romulus and Remus. To begin the festival, members of the Luperci, an order of Roman priests, would gather at the sacred cave, where the infants Romulus and Remus, the founders of Rome, were believed to have been cared for by a she-wolf, or Lupa. The priests would sacrifice a goat for fertility and a dog for purification. They would then strip the goat's hide into strips, dip them into the sacrificial blood, and take to the streets, slapping crop fields with goat hide. Far from being fearful, Roman women welcomed these hides. Later in the day, according to legend, all these women in the city would place their names in a big urn, and the city's bachelors would each choose a name and become paired for the year with his chosen woman. And these matches often ended in marriage. Valentine's Day meaning, a day of romance and love. Lupercalia survived the initial rise of Christianity, but it was outlawed, as it was deemed unchristian at the end of the 5th century when Pope Gelasius declared February 14th St. Valentine's Day. It was not until much later, however, that the day became definitively associated with love. During the Middle Ages, it was commonly believed in France and England that February 14th was the beginning of birds' mating season, which added to the idea that the middle of Valentine's Day should be a day for romance. The English poet Geoffrey Chaucer was the first to record St. Valentine's Day as a day of romantic celebration in his 1375 poem, Parliament of Foals, writing, For this was sent on Saint Valentine's Day, when every fowl cometh there to choose his mate. Valentine greetings were popular as far back as the Middle Ages, though written Valentines didn't begin to appear until after 1400. The oldest known Valentine still in existence today was a poem written in 1415 by Charles, Duke of Orleans, to his wife while he was imprisoned in the Tower of London following his capture at the Battle of Agincourt. The greeting is now part of the manuscript collection of the British Library in London, England. Several years later, it is believed that King Henry V hired a writer named John Lydgate to compose a Valentine note to Catherine of Valois. And who is Cupid? Cupid is often portrayed on Valentine's cards as a cherub launching arrows of love at unsuspecting lovers. But the Roman god Cupid had his roots in Greek mythology as the Greek god of love, Eros. Accounts of his birth vary. Some say he is the son of Nyx and Erebus, others of Aphrodite and Ares. Still others suggest he is the son of Iris and Zephyrus, or even Aphrodite and Zeus, who would have been both his father and grandfather. According to the Greek archaic poets, Eros was a handsome immortal, played with the emotions of gods and men, using golden arrows to incite love and leaden ones to sow aversion. It wasn't until the Hellenistic period that he began to be portrayed as the mischievous, chubby child he'd become on Valentine's Day cards. And typical Valentine's Day greetings and gifts. In addition to the United States, Valentine's Day is celebrated in Canada and Mexico, the United Kingdom, France, and Australia. In Great Britain, Valentine's Day began to be popularly celebrated around the 17th century. By the middle of the 18th century, it was common for friends and lovers of all social classes to exchange small tokens of affection or handwritten notes. And by 1900, printed cards began to replace written letters due to improvements in printing technology. Ready-made cards were an easy way for people to express their emotions in a time when direct expression of one's feelings was discouraged. Cheaper postage rates also contributed to an increase in the popularity of sending Valentine's Day greetings. Americans probably began exchanging handmade Valentines in the early 1700s. In the 1840s, Esther A. Howland began selling the first mass-produced Valentines in America. Howland, known as the mother of the Valentine, made elaborate creations with real lace and ribbons and colorful pictures known as scrap. Today, according to Hallmark, an estimated 145 million Valentine's Day cards are sent each year, making Valentine's Day the second largest card-sending holiday of the year. More cards are sent only at Christmas. And who was the real Saint Valentine? On February 14th, we share chocolates and special dinners and doily cards with our loved ones. And we do it in the name of Saint Valentine. But who was this saint of romance? Search the internet and you can find plenty of stories about him, or them. One Saint Valentine was supposedly a Roman priest who performed secret weddings against the wishes of the authorities in the 3rd century. Imprisoned in the home of a noble, he healed his captor's blind daughter, causing the whole household to convert to Christianity and sealing his fate. Before being tortured and decapitated on February 14th, he sent the girl a note signed, "Your Valentine." Some accounts say another saint named Valentine during the same period was the Bishop of Terni, also credited with secret weddings and martyrdom before beheading on February 14th. Unfortunately for anyone hoping for a tidy romantic backstory to the holiday, scholars who have studied its origins say there's very little basis for these accounts. In fact, Valentine's Day only became associated with love in the late Middle Ages, thanks to the English poet Geoffrey Chaucer. The two stories that everybody talks about, the bishop and the priest, they're so similar that it makes me suspicious, says Bruce Forbes, a professor of religious studies at Morningside College in Iowa. And there are multiple martyred Saint Valentines. Valentine was a popular name in ancient Rome, and there are at least 50 stories of different saints by that name. But Forbes said the earliest surviving accounts of the two February 14th Valentines written, starting in the 500s, have a whole lot in common. Both were said to have healed a child while imprisoned, leading to a household-wide religious conversion, and they were executed on the same day of the year and buried along the same highway. The historical evidence is so sketchy that it's not clear whether the story started with one saint who then became two, or if biographers of one man borrowed details from the other, or if either ever existed at all. Perhaps more disappointing for the romantics among us, the early accounts of the two Valentines are typical martyrdom stories, stressing the saints' miracles and gruesome deaths, but containing not a word about romance. They're both mythical to begin with, and the connection with love is even more mythical, says Henry Kelly, a scholar of medieval and Renaissance literature and history at UCLA. Tracing Valentine's Day to Lupercalia. So St. Valentine's Day has also been associated with a Christian effort to replace the older holiday of Lupercalia, which Romans celebrated on February 15th. Women just wrote their names on clay tablets, which men then drew from a jar, pairing up random couples. But again, early accounts don't support this. The closest parallel between Lupercalia and modern Valentine's Day traditions seemed to be that the Roman festival involved men slapping around everyone with pieces of goatskin. According to the ancient writer Plutarch, some young married women believed that being hit with the goat skins promoted conception and easy childbirth. Whatever minor romantic connotations might have been part of Lupercalia, they did not translate to the new Christian holiday. It just drives me crazy that the Roman story keeps circulating and circulating, Forbes says. The bottom line for me is, until Chaucer, we have no evidence of people doing something special and romantic on February 14th. So how did Chaucer create the Valentine's Day we know today? In the 1370s or 1380s, he wrote a poem called Parliament of Fowls that contained this line, "For this was on St. Valentine's Day, when every bird comes there to choose his mate." This was a moment in Europe when a particular set of romantic ideas took shape. Chaucer and other writers of his time celebrated romance between knights and noble ladies who could never marry, often because she was married already, creating tropes of yearning and tragic obstacles that still drive our romantic comedies today. By the 1400s, nobles inspired by Chaucer had begun writing poems known as Valentines to their love interests. It was only at this point that stories began to appear linking St. Valentine to romance. But there's one final twist in this myth of St. Valentine. When Chaucer wrote of the day when every bird chooses a mate, Kelly argues that he was thinking not of February 14th, but of May 3rd, a day celebrating one of the many other St. Valentines. After all, England is still awfully cold in mid-February. In Kelly's view, Chaucer was looking for a way to celebrate King Richard II's betrothal to Anne of Bohemia on that day, and found that was the feast day for Valentine of Genoa. He could have chosen the Feast of the Holy Cross, but that wouldn't have sounded as nice in the poem. But since his contemporaries were more familiar with the February 14th St. Valentine's Day, that was the date that became attached to the new holiday of romance. In some ways, that may be a good thing. February is the worst month in cold climates, Kelly says. It's great to have something to look forward to. Next up, we have station KSAT asking their readers if they have any interesting Valentine's Day stories they wish to share. And some readers responded, so let's look at some of their responses here. First up, they say, I met this guy. He asked me out for Valentine's Day, and we went to a free dog show. Real romantic, right? But I was cool with it because I do like animals. But then we saw my aunt and grandma there, and he insisted on hanging out with them the entire time. Then he asked me to drive him to the store. When we went in, he grabbed a teddy bear and fake flowers and some groceries, and we got to the checkout line, and he asked me to pay for it because he forgot his money. And then he handed me the plastic bag with the fake flowers and bear and said, here you go, happy Valentine's Day. Most romantic date ever. Insert eye roll. That's from Jamie from Roanoke, Virginia. The second reader responds, way back in my 20s, I found out the man I engaged to was married. And that's Rose from San Antonio. Next up, the reader says, my mother's birthday is on Valentine's Day. When she and my dad started dating, they were both living in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. They had a date planned to celebrate my mom's birthday. Dad was a couple hours late, which made mom pretty angry. And when he finally arrived, she told him as much from the top of the stairs to her flat. He responded by saying that he had something for her. Her response was, throw it up here. So he did. It was an engagement ring. They married in Niagara Falls in September 1952. The reception overlooked the falls, and they were married for 60 years. That is submitted by Evelyn from Troy, Michigan. Next up, a reader says, I made a date with a woman for Valentine's Day 54 years ago. I spent every last dime I had for this date. I showed up at her apartment only to find another man there, playing a guitar and singing. She and her three roommates were all sitting around in casual clothes. When I arrived in my suit and saw what was going on, I asked her if we actually had a date. The dude left. She ran upstairs and changed while I waited, and I became madder and madder. We did complete our date, and we were married for 52 years before she passed away. And that's submitted by Jerry from Wimberley, Texas. The next reader says, once, in the early years of marriage, my then-husband and I wanted to eat at our favorite restaurant on Valentine's Day. The wait was 2 hours for a table for two. The hostess asked if we would share a table for four with another couple so we could get in faster. So we did. We had dinner with a young couple, and it was so awkward. We made idle chit-chat, we exchanged business cards, and then never spoke to them again. At least we got our dinner in a decent amount of time. And that's submitted by Jeannie from Houston. The next reader writes in and says, my first day in divorce court was on Valentine's Day. And that's submitted from Paul from St. Cloud, Florida. The next reader writes in and says, this isn't a funny love story, but I feel it's unique in connection with how our lives repeatedly had crossed paths, beginning in being raised in the 1940s, a mile or two apart in the Brooklyn, Queens area of New York City. Many times, even into our teens, we were in the same place at the same time. We finally met the day before freshman orientation at Hope College in Holland, Michigan. And this girl sitting next to me turns and says, "I know you." We got married 4 years later in 1960. And that is by Ronald from Christiansburg, Virginia. The next reader writes in and says, "In 1999, I was talking to a man I had known 8 years before in high school. We had gone to coffee a few weeks before, but plans kept getting canceled. So we finally decided to go out on Valentine's Day for our first date. Well, Valentine's Day is also my birthday, and I had told him that a few times on the days leading to the holiday. I agonized on what to bring. Should I bring a card, a gift, nothing? I settled on a small inspirational book and bookmark. Friendly, but not too much. He met me at the restaurant with absolutely nothing. Not even a card. He seemed not at all perturbed that he had made such a glaring faux pas. I should mention that exactly 1 year later, we landed in Ireland for the first day of our honeymoon. He had been showering me with gifts on the week of my birthday, which includes our anniversary on February 12th, every year since. This marks more than 20 years of him making up that first birthday slash Valentine's Day date." And that concludes today's special Valentine's Day edition of Short Stories. This has been Angie Gorkoff, your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Goodbye. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it on demand anytime on our website at www.sunsounds.org and then click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Also know we have a new Sun Sounds app that you can download at any time.